Good evening, everybody. Welcome back to the Always Smiling Faces podcast on the Gallagher Shots YouTube channel, which is now part of the 90 Min Football Network. It's the first time I've said that. First time I remember to say that. Everybody else has done it apart from me. Sorry for the delay, everybody.
Are you watching us? Somebody's not on mute.
I am. I've got the, watching us.
I've got the YouTube on, so I can abuse Mark in the comments, and he doesn't know.
Bestie's watching himself whilst watching himself.
It's a bit like it's probably like American Psycho stuff, like I, but
butterfly effect,
but a bit more PG.
So as you can see, it's just that the three of we've ditched Digger. Digger's not here tonight, but don't worry, we do have it covered. So people are waiting to hear those words. We do have it covered. But to start off, how are both of yous two this evening? How are you, Mark?
Excited,
okay.
Excited,
yeah. I'm excited too. Saw you. Was it yesterday? I saw you.
Yes.
It was. Yep. Was yesterday? I saw you, Mr. Best. You yesterday as well.
We've seen a lot of each other in the last week, haven't we?
Yeah.
In person.
More, if anything, more than I would like, to be honest with you. Like, yeah.
I've seen Bestie once.
But for a long old time, a lovely old time as well. It was. That's
like, we did. We had a very nice evening, didn't we?
It did once I started serving, aye.
Oh, yeah. We'll get on that later. We'll get on. So let's start it off the way that we always start this off, on the back of a Newcastle United win. It's not for one of us to say these magical words. It is up for Degger, Mr. Petrie, to say those ones. So, ladies and gentlemen.
Sorry I couldn't be there tonight, gents, but I could not let you carry on without doing this. We're one, you know. Get in.
I love those words. I love it, you know. Absolutely love it.
I feel like I'm at an award ceremony and like it's a, I'm sorry, Decker Petri couldn't be here this evening to accept his award, but he did record this little video for us.
Yeah. So it's lads, back-to-back wins, according to Steve Bruce.
Well, technically it was back-to-back wins against Burnley.
No, we got beat up Burnley.
We beat them 3-1 at home. Saints scored as well.
It was probably the best we've played all
right.
season.
Yeah, you're right. But yeah, Mr. Bruce, I don't know where this came from, but he's completely forgot about the defeat to Crystal Palace. Now he's given extra points against Spurs. We won that game, apparently. So we're back-to-back wins. Why does nobody call them out on this?
It's all about the accumulation of points, mate. All these wins have got to help out somewhere along the line.
We're accumulating imaginary points at the minute as well.
He's trying to do it because obviously it's kind of long been said that, or by us at least, that he's got a lot of friends in the media that kind of overlook his deficiencies. So maybe he's trying to say it so that like Chris Sutton repeats it, Robbie Savage repeats it, and the Premier League go like, I just give him a couple more points, why not?
Nobody knows.
On FIFA, when you can buy a win from the catalogue, maybe he's just done that.
Possibly,
I've never,
mate.
I've never had to do that, of course. Like,
of course, the man of your talent, Bestie. Of course, you haven't had to do that. So let's get to the game, boys. Mark, myself,
game boys.
And
get it in.
me and you've done the live watch along, Mark. And what a time we had. Not so much in the first 45 minutes. The first 45 minutes were up there with, as always, some of the worst football we've ever seen in the Premier League, hands down. Bestie, did you watch this game? Or were you gardening or something?
I was, where was that? I was in Exhibition Park with the Bane and Minami. And I got back just in time for kickoff. And it was desperate. It was really, really poor, to be honest with you. Like, up until, well, obviously we're going to get I suspect we're going to get the certain individuals that came on off the bench.
Mention that.
We're just going to give it a miss, not bother with him. Like,
just look over it.
Yeah, but no, it was just really poor. Burnley didn't really have to turn up in the first half and they were ahead. It was like, it was, I remember the ball going out under Jacob Murphy's foot for throwing at one point, and it was like, that's just what it's been like today. Didn't seem to be any real shape. The goal that Burnley scored, which I'm kind of maybe jumping ahead a little bit here, was the kind of thing we've seen over and over again this season, where they just have someone drop back and cut it back. Leicester scored a couple like that against, I think Southampton, someone else there, I can't remember exactly now. So I think it was Southampton, and it's just, again, so easy to find space in the Newcastle penalty area because the defence all go back the byline and the midfield seems to sit 20 yards out.
Yeah, so Mark, we I'm not ignoring you, boys. I'm just putting a link out for this so we get more people watching. So as we saw the team set up, Mark, we were trying to figure out who was going to be playing in what position, but we soon found out in regards to the back three, five, whatever the hell it was. The players that were in there, we said that Bruce would have had a difficult decision to make with some of those players, especially with the likes of Saint and Wilson being fit enough to play a part in the game. But the likes of Jacob Murphy held his position, Sean Longstaff held his position. Two players for me who stood out once again.
I think, yeah, once they kind of got going, they started coming more into the game. Like Bestie's just said there, the first half was just forgettable, and there wasn't really many of the people within the team that really stood out in there. I mean, Dubravka came in for a lot of praise. He made a very, very good save, but up until that, we'd been, you know, questioning maybe some of the decisions he was making on crosses, and he wasn't looking very confident when he was coming out and stuff like that. And then all of a sudden, his game changed as well. So I think it was just growing into the game. Like, we did seem to get a little bit of confidence, but even going into the second half, like, it didn't start off great. And it wasn't really until the changes, as Bestie's alluded to, that things started happening. But I thought Vydra for them was just an absolute nuisance. He was just everywhere, causing us problems, and having those the three central defenders, just they couldn't seem to handle him, because he was just dropping in between them, running in between the lines and channels between those three and stuff like that, and that's what caused a lot of the issues. And kind of Burnley were just hitting very long straight balls, which you would think should be meat and drink to a big central defender, just to head it clear. But we were missing the ball, we were letting it bounce, we were letting them get in behind. Where it was just comical, like some of the decision making that was going on at the back and in the midfield too. If Shelvey and Longstaff for long periods of that were completely bypassed and invisible, just because of the way we were playing and the way Burnley were playing. But thankfully, Longstaff, as you mentioned, did come into the game and started being a lot busier and stuff like that. And likewise, Murphy started getting a lot of space and pushing forward. So turned out all right in the end, I guess.
Oh, well, you've covered everything there. Everybody, thanks for watching.
Pretty much. Like, that was so in-depth. It was really, really in-depth. But all I can think of is how you pronounce Vydra's name.
Vydra.
Vydra?
I've been trying to think of, like, Captain America puns and stuff for the last five minutes or so.
I kept thinking of Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Like, when I was Hydra. Watching them, Hydra, I'm like, it just kept reminding of that.
But is it not Vydra?
It's Vydra, like that.
Vydra, I don't know. It's spelled V-Y-D-R-A, isn't it? Vydra. Vydra. Vydra, just, Vydra, Vydra.
We could do a full podcast. You know what we'll do? Right. In the summer, when there's no Newcastle United things to talk about, we'll get a list of foreign players and just put them in front of Mark, and he's got to try and pronounce each one of them. It's a podcast in itself.
It is. It's like that video that goes viral every couple of years of the American trying to pronounce the English players' names, and you probably seen it. Like, I don't even go any further than that. But yeah, I would. They always seem to say Vydra, don't they? I think Vydra is how it's.
I'm not a Burnley fan, so don't pay that much attention. but obviously, I had the sound turned right down when we were doing the live stream as well. So
yeah, but so you mentioned true. Obviously the Vydra was getting in and around and being very busy. We massively struggle with any sort of player that's got a little bit of talent, really, and that's all that it is. That's it really is. Anybody who's got the tiniest little thing about them, and we crumble, absolutely crumble. And I would say, I know Kieran Clark's been a great servant, like, but that first half, Kieran Clark was shocking, Bestie.
He's
in a knot, didn't he?
He did. Like, I think Clark's one of those players, as you say, he's been a good player forward. And I think he'll continue to be a good player forward as well. I think it's one of those ones where he's just kind of had a bit of a mare, which is, for me, he's long overdue. Because when they went down, like with the players that they signed, obviously Gale came in, Richie came in. Kieran Clark was like, well, he's just got relegated with Villa. Is he really going to be that? But he's been great. Look at the players that he's been and gone since he's been there. Like, obviously, Grant Hanley was in the championship.
Grant Hanley, Jesus. Yeah.
He's getting rave reviews down at Norwich as well.
Yeah, well, that he's captain in the top of the league, aren't they? Yeah. I mean,
Where did we sign him from? Did we not sign him from Norwich?
Nah, Blackburn.
Blackburn, was it?
Blackburn we got him from, yeah. But like Norwich, I think if they win one more game, they're up. Or if Brentford don't win the next game or something.
They'll be some great football once again this season.
That good side. I hope we come up. We stay up and they come up because it's way you haven't said that.
We always bump into each other in Norwich.
Aye.
I'll tell you what, I wouldn't like to drive to there from London.
We're not going on this. Thank you very much, Larry. Thanks for becoming a member. Your membership will help us out massively, massively in the coming weeks. So you'll find out more about that and go to
top secret. But speaking of Norwich, I think like that Vidraw, he reminded me a little bit of. He reminded me very much of Pookie when he played for Norwich against when the tour were apart, like that first game of the season, like all of his movements and little runs.
He had a great start of that Premier League season, didn't he?
Yeah. So he was that kind of player, just causing an absolute nuisance of himself and just being busy and annoying, I guess. So
yeah, another player that I want to mention. I'm looking at the comments here and it's a bit to and fro, but Paul Dummett, he done his usual thing where he does look quite shaky on the ball, but defensive wise, Paul Dummett's a decent player defensive wise. It's just when he gets that chance of going forward, he just doesn't know what to do, and he really doesn't. He struggles, but as a defensive left side centre back or left back, whatever the hell he is these days, he's my first pick with that left footed player. Not sure about you.
I don't know about first pick. I've always liked Dummett. I always think Dummett's had a lot of abuse that maybe he wasn't due. I'm not saying he's played brilliant in every game. You know, it's not like the Joe Linton thing where you've either got to love him or hate him. But I think Dummett's very useful. I probably wouldn't have him in my starting 11 if you're playing five at the back where you've got Clark, Lascelles, Fernandez, Scher, who can all play in that kind of role. I'd like to have Lascelles in the middle, if anything, mate. But Fernandez probably on the right. Fabian Scher, see, Scher's another one. I had him in mind when I was talking about Clark earlier. Scher's like, he's brilliant, and then he's terrible. He's in Newcastle for a reason. You know, there's a reason he hasn't gone to like a Man City, a Tottenham, a Chelsea. You know, it's because he's deficiencies in his game. But Dummett, for me, he's got that kind of. He can play left back. I mean, we've always been told that left back wasn't his. He's chosen role, like, you know, he's really a centre-half. So to have been really first-choice left-back for about five, six seasons maybe till Lewis came in, when he's been fit, of course. And then to play centre-half as well, I think there's definitely a role for Paul Dummett, like at Newcastle.
Yeah, I think Paul Dummett is spenders. Even cut the coming years, I can't imagine Paul Dummett leaving. There was rumours a few years back that he might have been going to Palace, but that was when Pardew was manager at Palace, wasn't it? There's rumours that Pardew wanted to take. Of course he did. A left back. Of course Pardew wanted to take him. Somebody else that we need to talk about is we'll go to the next step. So players who weren't pulling the weight. And Mark, we'll come to your favourite player. Do you know who I'm going to come to?
It has to be John Joe.
Yeah. So John Joe Shelvey. What does he do? Like, what does he actually do?
I've literally got no idea. No idea. He is the epitome of, I don't know. You just never know from 1 minute to the next what you're going to get, because you can go through a game being absolutely terrible, not picking out his pass, not moving, not tracking back, and then all of a sudden he'll just pick out an unbelievable ball that just splits the defense, or you know, or rakes it 80 yards and stuff like that. But it's, the problem is it's too few and far between. He'd get away with it more if he did play the balls forward a lot more. It's always that thing of dropping back, picking up the ball, and then rather than looking to move it forward, he'll just come back, drop back, and then he'll give it out at somebody to the right or somebody to the left, and it doesn't actually get where anywhere. But he's just frustrating, isn't he?
Yeah. Bessie, what do you make of his performances? Because once again, I think there's a lot of players in that team over the weekend where a lot of people are sitting thinking, nah, he had a really bad game, but then on the other side of the fence is like people watch a completely different game, as always, and people are saying, oh no, Shelby had a decent game. It's a strange one.
He's a really funny player, Shelby. I mean, in the championship, he was so important, I thought, because the amount of kind of what Mark said there a little bit, where he would come back, take the ball off the back four, and he would be the link to the rest of the team. So he would pick it up really deep in our half, take it over halfway, then he'd ping one out to whoever was on the wing, like Gouffran, for some reason, sticks out in my head. Perez or Richie or whomever it was, and he had that extra time on the ball in the championship. You remember teams would just sit back, and it could be really hard to break down. Burton at home comes to mind when the Richie penalty thing, where we just couldn't get through them for ages and ages and ages. And a lot of the championship was like that, I thought. And then the Premier League, because teams tend to pack the middle of the park more and they come at you a bit more, Shelby hasn't got that time. He can pick a wonderful pass out every now and then. I mean, we've all seen that happen a few times. But like, by the same token, he's quite often you'll see him overhit a ball by about a good 10, 15 yards and it goes out for a goal kick or a throw-in.
Kick off yesterday, mate.
Kick off, yeah.
And it's, he's infuriating. There's a really, technically he's fantastic, but he's just, I think he's lacking I don't know if it's a mentality thing. A lot of people say he runs more than they realise, but because he looks like quite languid, like Amiobi or like Chris Waddle did, that it doesn't look like he's working hard when he actually is. And I don't know if I buy that, to be honest with you. Like, he's he's at Newcastle because he didn't make it at Liverpool, did okay enough, I suppose, with Swansea. And he's at the level that his kind of performances and his ability would have him. He's at a bottom five Premier League team.
And he has been for a while. In regards to fighting relegation fights, let's go straight to their goal. There's a comment there saying that I can't remember it so far. I'm saying this is what's wrong with our fan base. We go through the negatives of players. Let's be honest. We've started with how well Jacob Murphy done, how Longstaff was doing. I think I was saying Paul Dummett
should be on there.
There's half of the players that were starting that were praising. So simmer down, mate. Jesus Christ. their goal. Now we'll get to slate somebody. Rightly so. We'll stick on the same player with John Joe Shelby. But another, it was Vydra who had the ball, I think, at this point.
Vydra.
He just literally, like I said before, he puts Clark in knots, he puts Fernandez in knots. I'm sure it was him who had the ball. And Shelby and Longstaff are running back, but as soon as they get to the edge of our box, it seems like both of them just go
running?
Nah.
Running back?
Strolling back. But as soon as they get in our box, they just go, nah, somebody else will do that. Then it's just a basically somebody just stand there just to put it past Dubravka, and that's all that's needed. And that's a worrying thing because, of course, I'm sat here saying Fernandez and Clark got obviously turned upside down, but that ball, well, sorry, not the ball, but the spare player in the box shouldn't have that much space.
Absolutely.
You shouldn't have that much space. For me, you go back 5-10 seconds or whatever in the... There's a ball comes over the clock over the top. Clark heads it out, and it's not a terrible header by Clark. There's just no one there. It goes over the halfway line and just into the Burnley half. And you think, oh, well, there's got to be a Newcastle player there to pick it up, and there's nobody. I don't know where they are. And that was a big problem for me. As soon as you see that happen, you think, wait, they're going to break them. We're here because they've got, if their midfielders are in front of ours even now when we've had the ball in the back, then there's no one to stop them. They're just going to get the defenders. It's similar to what happened against Leicester. Now, I said earlier, the defence back off. It's cut back. And I think Fernandez probably should pick Vidra up, But Longstaff again is, I think, about 16, maybe on a penalty spot. Mm. Beg pardon.
Yeah, he is. Yeah,
and it's not the first time this season we've said this about him and Matty, where they just don't seem to pick that man up for some reason. Mm. Whether they're getting told to kind of sit on the 18-yard box and let a defence deal with it or what, like, but it there's mistakes all over the place. Clark probably should do better with the clearance, but for the ball to bounce their side of the halfway line, and there's not a, I was going to say a black and white, there's not any Castle players in sight. It's dreadful that, like, and there's only one way that's going to go. They're just going to burst on you like they did. And apparently, you aren't exactly rapid, like.
No, that ball, when it does come back, it's like, it's probably about 10 yards away from Shelvey, and there's a burn, like, the ball practically goes between Shelvey and the Burnley player. And Shelvey makes no attempt to try and challenge for it or get yourself in the way or anything. And then gets away from him, takes the run, and then Shelvey starts just jogging back. No real awareness of anybody going. And he's got a massive head start over Longstaff as well. And Longstaff, by the time the pair of them get to the edge of the box, Longstaff's caught him right up. And then the bit that you're saying there, Bestie, about Longstaff is he's completely ball watching. He's got no awareness of what's going on in that box. If you watch the goal back, he's staring at the player with the ball, not looking at what's happening in our goal area, what's happening in front of the goal, which is where the danger is. He's looking across the box at their player with the ball, thinking, right, where's this going to go? Rather than just averting his eyes to the middle of the goal, seeing their player stand there completely unmarked, and just go mark him, pick them up, cross the ball, get something like that just to block it. But like Chris, we talked about, like, before he even kicked off around the back three, and the fact that either Fernandes or Clark were going to have to play out of position, and basically both of them weren't they? We had Fernandes across to the right and Clark in the middle to fit Dummett in on the left-hand side. And we're seeing warnings even before the goal of just a lack of communication between them, just not kind of talking to each other, both going for the same ball and that kind of thing, going up for headers, trying to win it together. And like, I guess it stems from there, that lack of communication, the lack of playing together in those positions, because like you say, that ball that gets out towards the like the byline, they both kind of get drawn towards it. Mm, and yeah, the whole back five gets sucked in towards the line, rather than being aware and just thinking, hang on, I just need to hang back a little bit here. They're all just getting pulled in, ball watching, and then that's when you do need your Shelvey and your Longstaff to then think, right, well, if they're piling there, we need to make sure that we're getting in between.
It just
that
needs
gap.
One of them as well. And not both of them, it just needs one of them. Yeah. One of them can sit on the edge of the box, hoping that the ball's going to fall them and we're way up the field. But they both stand there waiting for all that to happen, which it doesn't. A player just slots it past to Brabka at the back of the net. But it's typical Newcastle United. How many goals have we conceded like this? So easy, far too easy for teams. And we said during the live recording, Mark, that you're not angry when you concede goals which are well like taken, or if it's an absolute fantastic strike, or if it's a full-on team goal where they literally just tear your new arsehole, just pass it through you. But it wasn't that. It was just too easy for them. But let's get on to the juicy bits of the game. There's been a few mentions of this. So VAR stole the headlines once again this weekend. Friday night with the Wolves Fulham game on Saturday afternoon? Or Saturday evening. What was it, that offside one? It was another game.
The Friday night, Wolves and...
But there was one the day after as well. There was two. Was it Liverpool?
Wolves had one disallowed, and then it was...
It was Liverpool, wasn't it?
I think it was Liverpool, yeah.
It was the Friday night and then the Saturday.
Yeah. So, let's get the VAR now again. How is that not a penalty? And that is the simplest of questions. VAR looked at it. Everybody in the studio said it was a penalty. All of us said it was a penalty. And Bestie, we'll get your thoughts on this one, because me and Mark were spitting feathers during that live stream. So the explanation which is given is that Longstaff puts his head towards the ball and lowers his head towards the ball. And because the defender challenged for the ball and touched the ball first, that's not a free kick or a penalty in this case. Later on in the game, we saw an identical thing with Sean Longstaff and we got given a free kick. Why is that not a penalty when it's in the box?
I've no idea. I can't explain it. I've seen what they said. And Mark Clattenburg said something today that was quite similar. That Longstaff's gone in with his head. The defender didn't know he was there, which is no justification whatsoever, by the way. I can't agree with that at all. And that's not a penalty. I can't. Like, you know, when you first see it, I thought, oh, well, maybe he has gone in a bit low, but he's not upright, but it's a penalty. There's just, I don't understand. And I mean, it's as much as it's kind of VAR that's made the referee should see that. The referees must give a penalty there straight away. I wonder if he hasn't given it, thinking that, oh, well, VAR will tidy it up and the right decision will be made. Yeah. But no, I don't get how, when you watch it over and over again, and as you say, Chris, in the second half, a very similar challenge just outside our box, and we get a free kick from it because of the high foot. It's just, I'm lost for words. It's outrageous.
It's crazy, isn't it? Anthony
Taylor had no thought to give that penalty. It just didn't even cross his mind, because as soon as it happened, he waved it off straight away. Like saying, no, it's not a penalty. So it there wasn't even a thought or a doubt in his mind that it could have been. So, like, why are you saying there, like, maybe he was hoping that VAR would give it the benefit of the doubt and make it up? I honestly think he just went, nah, that's not a penalty. And then VAR will only kind of interject if they think it's a clear and obvious error in his judgment, and it has to be a penalty. But I mean, when you see it back, like, the explanation was that Longstaff stooped towards the ball. I mean, he's 6'2" or something like that, and he bows his head, if anything. So, and he's getting kicked in the forehead, so their player is kicking at least 6 foot high there. So how is that not a high foot and a dangerous challenge? How can you put your foot 6 foot in the air and not think it's going to hit somebody in the head?
Yeah, so one of the things which I mentioned during that stream, Mark, I said if it was the other way around and their defender was heading that ball to clear it and a Newcastle player just comes and tries to volley it, you know for fine well they're getting a free
100%
kick.
100% free kick, yeah.
Mm-hmm. If it's on the goalkeeper, if for some reason the goalkeeper goes to get that ball and a player out of nowhere, it kicks the ball, but then kicks the keeper in the head, you know it's going to be a free kick then as well. But for some reason, when it's opposition and you're attacking goal, the referees don't want to hear about it. And the fact that it went to VAR, we were sat there, Morgan, it's gone to VAR, they'll give this. We were convinced that we were getting a penalty there.
The more often you saw it getting played back, it was like, it 100%, it definitely is. It definitely is.
And I said when it did slow it down,
or something like that, or what? It just,
well, when they slowed it down and you were getting the still frames or zooming in or going back and forwards, and I said to you, Mark, I said they're going to come out with the excuse now that he's touched that ball first before he's kicked Longstaff in the face, which is exactly what they've done.
But I don't even understand how they could possibly see that's happened, because watching that, the timing, like, as they're slowing it down and we're watching, looking back what they're looking at, and you just, it all looked like it was all happening at exactly the same time. There didn't seem to be any clear touch of the ball and the ball then went off and he follows through and his head or anything like that. They just, it all comes and happens together. But it's, I don't know.
We've got a comment mark from Larry.
Kind of customer.
He says, you get touched in the face and it's foul. You get kicked in the face and not a pen. Obviously, he must be referring to the Sun incident where Manu scored, but in the build-up of that, Sun got a flick of a finger to his face. Then obviously the goal gets the start, gets brought in. Sun goes and scores a few minutes later. In our game, I think, Bessie, I think what we'll have to agree on here, VAR isn't the problem. VAR does its job. Everything's slowed down. The camera angles are there. That's fine. It's the people using VAR who are the problem, because we're seeing in different leagues where it does work. But for some reason, in the Premier League, as always, the officials managed to fuck things up.
Yeah, totally. And I've not really... VAR is like a concept I don't have an issue with. It's just going to be used properly. And this is one Sunday, where the referee said, well, hasn't given it, so kind of effectively said no foul. In the PGMOL, the Premier League, whatever the MOL stands for, said, oh, no, it's right, because if you look at this law here, and it's horseshit, it's rubbish. It's just, you're right, Chris, our VAR, in this instance, and with the Sun Heung-min thing, it's not VAR that's a problem necessarily, it's just how it's being used, it's how it's being applied. And there are ones where, like, the offside, it was the Wolves offside, I think it was, where it's the length of the sleeve, but one of them seems to have shorter sleeves on another one, and it's stuff like that's where the rules have got to change to accommodate VAR, because at the minute they're kind of almost working at odds with each other.
Yeah, and the whole offside thing, mate, when they store these offside down, they put lines all over the shop. It's like when they start like playing off the player's shoulder when he scored off his left foot. And I'm thinking, yeah, if you're going to look at offside, surely it's what you scores the goal with that you should be going off.
It always used to be that it was any part of the body that you could score a goal with got to be onside. Or it always used to be. That was up until, I think, this season, that's what it was.
Offside level, so, weren't you?
Yeah. Like I've seen Arsene Wenger say, well, effectively saying it should be daylight again between the striker and the defender. But even then, yes, that doesn't get rid of the problem. It just moves it a foot and a half that way, where they're going to be drawing lines on the screen to make sure that there's daylight. So I don't know. Offside in particular for me is where VAR really falls down. Because then you've got the issue with how many frames per second the camera works on and which frame do you go from with them kicking the ball. Because when you kick the ball, it's not like there's that little bit where your foot kind of goes into the ball almost, and the kind of, you know. So at which point do you take that from? Is it when the ball leaves your foot, or is it when your foot hits the ball? So there's loads of little kind of caveats, and it's not that VAR isn't fit for purpose, as I say. Not that I particularly like what it's done to the game, as things are. It's more that it's just not used properly, and there are too many grey areas. And it's something that they need to iron out and make sure they're getting right, or they just need to scrap it and say, right, we haven't quite got the right technology for it yet.
It's still subjective, isn't it? That's the problem, is you've still got a human being making a decision. So regardless of having the technology there, that still comes down to one person and their opinion on whether they think it's one thing or another, which is, I guess, when it works is when they have something and say to the referee, you might want to have a look at this, and get them to go and have a look at the screen at the side, and then they can talk it through. They can say, right, what's your opinion of it, and come to kind of sort of a bit of an agreement between them, so that it's then a bit more of a collective discussion rather than just one person sitting away, you know, making that decision, unless it is something that's, you know, absolutely clear. But we just don't see enough of that, for me, just going over and looking at the screen and just making a decision and based on that, and having those discussions. We've seen I think it was the West Brom game yesterday, where they couldn't make a decision whether the goal was onside or offside.
Didn't have the camera angle.
VAR, because they couldn't get the right angle. So again, it's like, well, if you're not covering the entire pitch, then it's flawed. If you can't clearly see with the amount of cameras that are there, then there's a problem. So I don't know. There's a whole host of, you don't expect to be having teething issues after, you know, 2-3 seasons of having this there. So it's just,
well, who was it earlier in the season where the referee had forgot to turn his watch on for the goal line technology?
Last season that was Villa, wasn't it?
Villa last season.
Well,
that's how they stayed up, wasn't it?
Yeah, they should have basically been relegated.
No, another horrendous thing. But Bestie, straight after that chance, well, it was that chance after that penalty appeal, Dwight Gayle goes and puts an absolutely fantastic challenge in, wins the ball clearly, and the referee blows his whistle straight away, free kick.
It's absurd.
I forgot about that.
It's some a kind of issue I've got with VAR this season, and the end of last season, is there's no fans. So, like, you know, when, like, you, if you get a goal that's chalked off and you think it's a good one, and the crowd are up, you know what it's like in St. James's Park, where when you feel like there's been some bad decisions go against you, even if they're not really, it gets the crowd going, and it can change the game. And when there's no crowd in there, it's just nothing. It's flat. It's a spectacle anyway. And adding that 2 or 3 minutes of kind of, you don't know what's going on, or there's no decision being made, it doesn't really, it detracts massively from football as a form of entertainment, I think. But yeah, that again, you say, that tackle Gayle makes, I think, in the next phase of play, from the penalty. That's the problem, though. I mean, do you use it for every single decision? Because then, I mean, the games would be, they'd still be playing now, you know? There's got to be a line. You look at how, I mean, people talk about how kind of rugby apply it or how cricket does or American football, but they are games with far more like natural stoppages. Football, I think one of the great things about football is how quick it is and how the game can change like that. Whereas, you know, like American football, well, football particularly, like
the difference with football, players can be as quick as they want with those sort of pauses in play. If we've got a throw, and player can run over, take it as quick as he wants. It's not a case where they've got to wait so long like you do in other sports. Same with free kicks. If you want to make a quick free kick, as long as the ball's on the deck and it's stopped, you can do that. But like I said, if you do look at it for every single sort of appeal or challenge, then of course. But it's a great point which you've made, Bessie, there. If you go right back to when Cheick Tiote scored against Man City, the noise in St. James's Park that day was loud. That's one of the loudest I've ever heard.
Yeah.
It was the full ground as well. You normally get pockets, but it was the full ground just going off it at the referee. And similar when Richie, when he had that penalty, then they got a free kick. Like, it was so loud then as well. And when you fuck up in St. James's Park, you know you fuck up.
Stuff like that can make an atmosphere. Like, I've been to more Newcastle games where an atmosphere has been created because of that than it has been by Newcastle being good. Like, I think back to, like, well, it's maybe an example of both this one, but Liverpool, Rafa's last home game where they got beat 3-2, and the crowd was going absolutely light for what felt like the whole 90 minutes. It was a brilliant, but the referee got some things wrong and Newcastle played pretty well, but it was
Fernandinho. Was it Fernandinho that done the dive when Richie was like a foot away from him?
On the in front of the stand.
Was it Rigi that scored from that ball coming in?
That was the third. That was the winner. That scored from that one. But St. James's is like, even when it's when really the referee's done nothing wrong, just that feeling of injustice can really get the crowd going. And it's something that's been badly missing this season. Like, and I mean, it works for you and work against you, but just when you're there and it happens, it's just so easy to get wrapped up in it.
Yeah. So half time comes and Newcastle were desperate for half-time to come at this point, because just before half-time, it was backs against the wall again. I think even the commentator said Newcastle will be counting down the seconds, But we'll come out in the second half, and both, Mark, we said Bruce needs to change something within the first 15 minutes. The players came out, there's no changes, but was the same sort of display in the first 10 minutes. Then the changes came. Early changes, something which we've been asking for God knows how long, when we're struggling in a game. To give Bruce credit, he did put both those on. So it's a double change. Joe Linton and Dwight Gayle went off. Two players who didn't really have much of an impact in the game. Obviously replaced by... If I say a step up, it doesn't give it justice. It's absolutely phenomenal, the difference between the two players coming on to the two players going off. So Wilson and Saint come on straight away. Saint Maximin. What a player, Mark. Like, he must have just thought, I'm just going to come on and win this game. I'm just going to come on and change it. He was on his game on Saturday, and that's a Saint Maximin that we'll love to see.
Yeah, well, he pretty much said that, didn't he, before he went on. He like, obviously, Willicks came out and said that he'd had a conversation before he kind of went on to the pitch about... he was going on to win it and win the game for and stuff like that. So, but I don't know, that game was just crying out for him, wasn't it? Because we had nothing in midfield. They were missing out midfield, as we know they do with the long ball. So there was just masses and masses of acres of space for him to just take. And like, what an introduction. But I guess it's that, like, we spoke about half-time, have said, like, that when we do make a change, we need to make sure it's before an hour. And, like, if it gets to that point and he hasn't made a change, then there's issues there. And thankfully, he made the change before that. So you've got to give him some credit for that, I guess. But you just... He didn't have any other option except to bring them on, did he? And thankfully, they are game changers, particularly Saint. And boy, did he come on and change the game, because he just came up and he just tore them to pieces, didn't he? Just went
at them. It's an assist and a goal in 7 minutes, I think it was. So something ridiculous like that, Bestie. But the assist, once again, he just starts dancing in the box and defenders just don't know what to do with it. Then he just passes it back to Murphy, and let's give Murphy credit. That's a fantastic strike to put in the corner. Absolutely amazing strike.
I thought he was just going to hang in towards the back post and see if someone would get it. Maybe Wilson would get ahead in it, Mike. But no, it's but St. Maximin, he ran at them and you could see the thought, like, we don't know how to deal with him here. Like, so he backed off and backed off. And he's in the box. It was like, I remember an advert for Nike, the World Cup 2010, Ronaldinho's just doing stepovers. And it's got like YouTube likes just go, and it was like that. He instantly changed it. And that, it was the ball back to Murphy was just like, roll back, whatever, 5-6 yards. And it's a low, he doesn't like put his foot through it, but he hits it lovely right across the keeper in the corner. It's a great finish. And that Murphy,
he passed full stretch, which makes it even better. He's like horizontal in the air.
Aye. Murphy, I thought, struggled a bit in the first half. And he's a player that I really want to see do well at Newcastle. I like him, even if he's. I don't think you're going to win the league with him and your team are out like that, but I do like him. And I want him to do well. So every time he scores or something happens, the kind of. You see on Twitter the picture of him and Jacob with the or him and Josh, sorry.
Denim blues.
It's a low strike, you know, but it's proper. But it's a good hit. It's a really good goal. And it really, really hadn't been coming. And it was St. Maximin and Wilson, more so St. Maximin, that made that difference. But yeah,
we said in the first half, we said, because obviously the game was passing by in the first half, and one of the reasons was because Burnley had two men on Almiron. Every time Almiron got the ball, there was two on him. Saint's arrival stops that because there's two men shifting over towards Saint. It doesn't matter how many defenders you put on Saint, you could put the full team on him, and he'd still manage to dance his way through half ears. He's just Mark. There's not enough words to describe this bloke when he's on top form like that.
He's unplayable when he's like that. And what really pleased us about it, and again, I said this at the time, was that he's got himself into those positions many times in the past, and then he hasn't always chosen the best option. He's either tried to shoot or flash it across the goal or pick out a cross or something like that. And even at the time as he's getting there, we're all shouting at him to cross it, to pass it, and he's just dancing and dancing. You're like, oh, he's going to, like, you're half thinking he's going to cock it up. And then, thankfully, he then picks out Murphy, as we said, who, honestly, if that ball goes anywhere except where he puts it, it's hitting off a defender and going out, or it's an easy save for the keeper. He cannot place that any better than he does, because it's just a perfect line and it absolutely flies in. It was just a wonderfully kind of made goal that was out of nothing, but then turned into a fantastic move and a lovely bit of link-up play between the pair of them to come up with it. And it's just magical, isn't he? Absolutely magical.
The best, absolutely the best. Bessie, you mentioned there that out of all the players, you would love to see Murphy go on and have a decent career here in Newcastle. You said that you want to do well. He did take his time to obviously get his feet on the ground in the Premier League. He struggled massively when he first arrived, when he was called as a substitute. But when he scored that goal and he's running away kissing the badge.
Kissing the badge.
Yeah, how much he wants it to work as well.
It's always like when I see someone kissing the badge, I'm quite cynical about it. And I think you don't really care about the club that much. But as I say, you've got to hit that photo of the Murphys when they were kids, like babies, in the denim away kit. And even then, you look at that photo, and I mean, that maybe is the word about the right age for that, 24 years ago. So it's proper. It's like when Lampard did it for Chelsea, you think, well, but you started for West Ham.
It's different when he's a fan, or he's a, you know, born and bred in the area or something like that. Like that, I don't know.
Totally.
Dummett doing it. Longstaff's doing it. Like, because you know that they're either born here or they support the club in their instance. Aye. That it's, they mean it, as opposed to like you're saying, being just lip service, just to say, oh, I'm going to kiss it just to get the fans on board.
Get the fans on. Yeah, so, I really want him to do well. I know I keep saying that, but I'm just conveying.
Make enough for Decker.
The only other time when it's nice when a player kisses the badge is in like a Joey Barton situation, where he kisses the badge just to wind up the Sunderland fans.
There's something about that as well, definitely. Aye.
Yeah, like proper shithouse and that, in it. Like, I'm just going to go out there and kiss his badge. Was that at Stadium of Light as well?
Yeah. Well, he did it when he was Fleetwood manager as well, didn't he? And the other week when he went back, obviously, when I was down at Bristol.
Bristol Rovers,
aye. So, yeah. He just loves winding them up. That's top and bottom of it, isn't it?
Yeah, so also, let's talk about Saints' goal. John Joe Shelby gets an assist for this goal, even though Saint picks it up.
It's a bit rich on the halfway to give line. An assist for
he
that
gets
leg,
an assist.
Isn't
it? He does run down as assist.
I don't know. He passes the ball 2 yards from the edge of the D to the inside of our halfway. I don't know. Technically, it's an assist, isn't it? It's
the final ball. This goal's getting compared to Ben Offa's against Bolton, I think it was. The videos that I've seen side by side.
I think it was one of the three of us on here that was doing that comparing.
Oh, was it? Who was it? Or was it you? Which one do you prefer?
I don't know. I'll go on mute because Amy's making that dinner. Which one do I prefer? I prefer St. Maximin's because he plays for now.
All right, okay.
And Ben Arthur was mint, but he's like a fat. Hang on a sec, there's clattering. He's a fat waster, so getting a bin. Ben Arthur was brilliant. That Ben Arthur goal, like when you look at it and the way he turns and he skips away from, I think it's Kevin Davis trying to break his legs, he skips away from him. It's a little early touch. But I mean, it's crap defending. Awful. It's a brilliant goal, but it's awful defending for him. Yeah. And this one's kind of the same that with that backing off and backing off Starkovsky and I think Ben Mee, maybe. They're batting off because they think that shit scared him. You know, that they know that if they dive in, he's gonna skin him. Mm. So it's similar. I mean, if you're talking degree of skill, I think Ben Arthur is easily the better goal. Like,
yeah,
but yeah. But he's
but a you're right though. You're right what you said there, Bestie. Mark, I'll come to you. But the players and defenders just don't know what to do other than just shimmy back and just keep on shimmying till they're so far in their own half and in their own box that it's too late. It's far too late.
Within the blink of an eye, he's gone from our half to the edge of their box, just which seems in like a couple of strides because he's moving across the ground.
Just by running the straight line?
Yeah. And they just back off. And they're then trying to show him towards the corner flag. And he just, I don't even understand how, like, the send him that, like, how he sends them. Because all he does is just shift it onto his foot and they go that way. The cameraman follows them and he just shoots off inside and then just tucks it away. Like it seemed like a nothing kind of little move to cut inside and do it. But how on earth he sold them? But God, the way he does it and then the finish on his weaker foot is just fabulous. Keeper's getting nowhere near it.
Hey, Mark, can you... Bessie, you're still on mute.
Yes, I am.
Bestie's miming.
I am. I've seen Matty's point about Ben Arthur's touch between the two centre halves. Because he takes the touch like half a step late. It's such an easy thing, but he kind of steps with his right foot and he almost takes an extra step and then touches it. And by that point, the defenders are thinking, oh, he's expecting, like, they're gone, they're sold. I mean, it's weak there, and I forget who else it. Centre half of Bolton that day, but it's a phenomenal goal. It's the speed at which he moves as well.
I don't even think that's his best goal, you know.
Which one are you going for? Blackburn in the cup?
Blackburn. I think Blackburn's much better.
Is Blackburn the one where there's about five players trying to hack him down?
Yeah.
Aye, it's a bit like Peter
Beasley. He's in the roof of the net, that one.
Not for me. It doesn't get half as much of exposure as the Bolton one does.
Yeah, like, it's because the footage is really crap. It was one camera in the stand.
Yeah,
and the footage is garbage.
It's getting recorded for like a betting company.
That one. It's like Beardsley again. I forget who it was against, but it was like we just kind of. I'm thinking Brighton.
Maybe
we kind of maybe it's Cardiff where he kind of just dummies it on the line and then puts it in the back of the net. It's really similar to that for me. Obviously, the finish is a bit more emphatic, but.
But the ball goal, his first touch where he basically just hits it around the corner and turns and goes, that is unbelievable.
It's lush, isn't it? We played some fantastic stuff towards the end that season.
Yeah, we did. But Saint, Mark, can you give us a little impression of Saint's dance once again, please? The worst.
Was that him? Was that actually St. Max?
that is, son. Do you know what it is? I just hope, like, and there was a comment in there, I'll show it on screen, saying that Wilson should get more of assist than Shelby for helping take the defenders away from Saint. It's one of those things when you do have Wilson, Almiron, and Saint on the field, defenders will hate it because the game plan, when one of those is on, is probably to double mark, and when all three of them are on. You just can't do it.
Yeah. It's, I mean, for all there's a lot talked, a lot made of like St. Maximin and Armoron's end product or like lack thereof. In fact, fair enough, I suppose. Like, they're still dangerous. They'll still take the ball 20, 30 yards forward and make defenders sweat, you know, and give the ball to Wilson or even Shelby or Gale if he's on the pitch. Or maybe he's not Joe so much, like, but no, it must be horrible to play against. It just, it's inferior. In fact, they're injuries as well. Like, even Ryan Fraser is capable as well. It just,
allegedly.
They just don't seem to set up to play to their strengths a lot of the time.
Yeah.
That's what I said with Miggy, wasn't it? Well, like, he was the only one that could kind of carry the ball for us, but because of the way that we'd set up and the fact that they could double up on him just meant it nullified any attacking threat that we had through him. But then that's why you need more than one runner on from midfield.
Almiron, when those two aren't in the team, when Wilson and Sam Maximin aren't in the team, Almiron's completely wasted because he gets put in a position where he's not. He's more favoured position. He just gets put anywhere across that front three to a point where he's like, just go out and just be in that position. And it changes all the time with Almiron. But when you do have the fix of those two other lads up top, then that gives Almiron a definite role in the team as well.
And that's why where we struggle to be able to fit all of the players that we've got into the team and into a lineup that works, because in order to accommodate them, other people have got to miss out, and to do that means you've got to change your formations and that kind of thing. And that's obviously why we saw Wilson playing out on the right hand side, Miggy playing through the middle, and Maxi on the left, just to try and get them into some sort of place. But you know, that's not where Wilson wants to play. He doesn't want to play out on the right. He wants to be up front by himself. But then Miggy gets wasted out on the right-hand side. So it's you almost want to have, like, Wilson in front and then have Miggy left, Fraser or somebody else on the right, Miggy in between that, and then have enough in midfield. But it's like, we haven't got the players to be able to accommodate that, a front four. Because the midfield two that are then kind of going to sit there and hold things up and bring a bit of energy just isn't apparent at the minute. I don't know whether the long staffs, whether long term that is an answer. I mean, Hayden's is historically our holding player, but obviously we're not going to have him for the rest of the season. So, but I mean, we've talked for God yonks forever about the middle of the park for us and the state of the players that we've got in there and that we haven't replaced certain individuals.
You're completely right, mate. What I want to speak about now, Mark, I don't think there's much else to speak about the game. Absolute fantastic 3 points for us. Crucial, especially massive. to capitalize on Friday night. So that's a huge step for us.
It's nice to do that once, isn't it? To be able to capitalize on it.
Yeah, had enough chances to do it, but we've done it. We're not safe yet, far from it, but there's a bit of a window there now and a bit of a gap. Now I'm slightly worried about playing West Ham. I'm not going to lie. Mark, just last week, you were saying West Ham weren't that good.
No, it wasn't that I was saying that they weren't that good. I was a little bit more confident because they were missing Rice. Rice was out injured. Antonio's out injured. So you think, you know, that's the two players that really, really make them tick. But as we know, Lingard's came in on loan, and Christ, I don't know where the hell they've got this player from, because he hasn't shown anything like this sort of desire and hunger in God knows how many years of being at Man United. You know, I know he's only 22 year old, but played there for 15 years. But it's, you know, boys, the first couple of breakthrough seasons that he had, he's never looked like reaching any sort of potential. But in the last, what, 3-4 months, he's just been unbelievable. And he's just completely turned around that team and Moyes. I mean, who would have thought he would be pulling out a job like he's doing there at the minute?
Yeah, well, West Ham bestie, they do play some great football offensive-wise and going forward, but they also concede goals. They do concede goals. And with Wilson, I would hope Wilson would start on, is it Saturday dinner time again? Is it 12 o'clock this week?
I can't remember, actually.
I'm sure it's a dinner time kickoff that will play West Ham. But with Wilson, I hope he's starting. 12:30. So I hope both him and Saint are starting. And Wilson loves playing against West Ham as well. So does Saint. So yeah, it's going to be one of those where it's. I don't think it's going to be a bad game. I really don't. In regards to a neutral point of view, for a Newcastle point of view, we might get hammered. But then it could go the other way because the elite goes as well. It's honestly, I just don't know what to expect from this one.
No, do I. I'm not expecting Newcastle to play very well, but there again, I wasn't at Goodison Park either. And they turned Everton over quite handsomely. I mean, it's going back, like, it was January that now, but it's a while ago. But yeah, I'm more confident going into it than I was before the Tottenham game. Weirdly, I mean, the Tottenham game only drew, but played really well. I thought Burnley, for the most part...
No, we won that one, remember?
Of course, that's like, back-to-back wins, haven't we? West Ham look fantastic at the minute. I mean, was it Leicester that played the weekend, where they were?
Yes.
Was it 3-0 up, 1-3-2? So, yeah. I mean, they do. Daryl Mitchell-Hill in the comments earlier made the point that West Ham tend to concede goals, but they generally have like a 3-4 goal head start when they do that. So,
I think if you're going to start conceding goals, like when you're 3 goals up, it's probably the best time to start conceding them.
Yeah. It's, I mean, we've had like the Arsenal game when they were 4-4 and West Brom at home that season, Toy Story 3 and all that. Like, so we've seen it before where that doesn't necessarily guarantee a win. QPR back in the 80s. But I think it's going to be a hard game. I think we're probably going to stay up looking at how the results they've got. And I think now they've got what looks like a fit Saint-Maximin, Almiron and Wilson. I think they'll get the results they need from the games that I need to get them in, i.e. Sheffield United, maybe Fulham, because Fulham have hit a really rough patch at the late of late. And I was going to say Tottenham, but we've already played them, so maybe it's not. But it's going to be tough. I think it's going to be very tough. West Ham look really good at the minute. They're in the shape up for fourth, which you wouldn't have said.
Well, Daryl says it. Daryl explains they were 3-0 up against Arsenal, drew 3-3. They were 3-0 up against Wolves, ended 3-2. And Leicester, once again, 3-0 up, ended 3-2 again. Daryl, all I'm seeing from that is 7 points out of 9.
7 points with 9 goals scored, yeah.
Yeah, that's all I'm seeing. I'm looking at the end result on that one. They're accumulating a hell of a lot more points than us. Put it that way.
But like it points out, you've got a chance, haven't you? And with Maxi, with Almiron and Wilson, I'm more confident that if we do get a chance with those three on the pitch, we'll take a one. So it's just hoping that we don't, you know, allow ourselves to get, you know, cut adrift by going, you know, 2-3 behind and then having to rely on we're coming back, because I'm not confident of us being able to score 2 and 3 goals to come back. I was amazed that we came back like twice in the last 2 games from behind to get something out of it.
Won both games as well.
Yeah, and we won both from a losing position. So it's I don't know if we can keep things tight and just stay in the game, then we've got a chance, but. It's the way that they play and they like to pile forward. It might suit us a bit better of being able to soak up some of that pressure. You just hope that we can actually concentrate, not make stupid defensive mistakes and ball watch and get sucked in. And then that we can do more of that, actually hitting them on the break and hurting them that way.
We need to be stronger defensively.
100%. Yep.
Yeah.
Definitely do. We can't be just opening the door for them like we did against Burnley. We literally just said, "There you go, lads, have a shot."
Bowen's going to be a big one for them as well, because he's really came into form. Yeah. That's what's kind of get him and what's he called? Who we're just talking about?
Lingard.
Like them two have just clicked massively. Mm-hmm. And yeah. I'm sure Bowen's got like 7 or 8 goals in the last like same dozen games, something like that. So it's just they're just hitting form at the right time.
Yeah, no, you're right. Lads, we've been going for an hour. And To be honest with you, I'm ready to go to bed.
Yeah, I'm tired. Like,
it was a long one yesterday. It was a long day yesterday. And with the bubs being back
over. That's what it is.
Yeah. What a busy day yesterday. Yeah. But once again, you'll hear about all that in the future.
Oh, I'm so excited.
Are you as excited as me? Dekka's really excited as well.
I'm really excited.
But yeah, have you got anything else that you want to add before we go tonight?
Oh, not that I can think of.
No, nothing comes to mind. No, I think we've.
We didn't pick up any knocks or anything, did we? Nobody had to go off injured, or there's been no sort of talk about any struggles. So you're just hoping that we're going to go into the weekend with everybody kind of that we know that's available is available.
Mm. Yeah. So, that is a bonus. So I'll leave you with one question. On Saturday against West Ham, I'll start with you, Bestie. Do you start both Saint and Wilson?
If they're fit enough to start, then yeah, I would do.
Yeah. Mark?
Mm-hmm. See, this is the tricky one, isn't it? Because we know what an impact that they can make. I don't know if they'll have 90 minutes in them, so it's that do you give them an hour to hope that we've got enough, or do you just give them kind of that 45 minutes.
Mm.
I think Saint has to start, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Just based on
both of them start.
What he gave with, and
both of them start. We need these players. We've been desperate to have these players back. So they're fit enough to be on the bench. They played nigh on the full second half, really. And
pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, they have to start at the weekend for me. You play your best players, end of the day. You have to.
Definitely. For all the impact they could have off the bench, they are the best, the two best players at the club probably at the minute, so you've got to play them.
Yeah.
I think.
Right. So, thanks, everybody. Thanks for joining us tonight. If you do want to do so and like the video, it means a lot to us. As always, I can't get my words out. I'm that tired. Subscribe. Subscribe to the Gallagher Shot YouTube channel.
Click the little bell.
Yeah,
Chris, well, Dekka's not
here.
Like I always say, if you do want to become a member, that helps us massively. It'll
you
help.
Definitely want to become a member in the coming weeks.
You do. Definitely want to become a member. There's a lot of things happening behind the scenes at Gallagher.hq. You'll hear about.
I can't wait till people find out.
Yeah, you'll hear more about that. But yeah, lads, I'm going to leave the final word to Dekka. So thanks for joining us tonight, boys, and
been a pleasure.
I'll see you during the week.
Sorry, I couldn't be there tonight, gents, but I could not let you carry on without doing this. We're one, you know. Get in.